Law is a burning thing, and it makes a fire ring. Bound by wild desire, I suited up for a trial by fire. I fell into a burning trial by fire. I went down, down, down when they painted my client a liar.
Who is this vocalist?
The lawyer in black. Trial by
fire. Sounds like.
Is it one Sevi Fisher from the finer parts of Idaho?
That's him.
Country boy.
The Red Rocket before Andy Dalton was the Red Rocket.
Of victory sweet. When the law and evidence meet, opposing counsel acted like a child. Oh, and the jury went wild.
That's right.
I fell into
wow, is that verse two?
That's verse two, baby.
I went
down,
two, nice.
Down, down, and the flames went higher, and it burns, burns, burns.
Wrote it in Folsom.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Justice Team podcast.
Woo, woo.
And that was just by our very own Sevi Willard Fisher. Sevi, what do you think? That was pretty good.
I like it.
Yeah. You can't have him comment on his own song.
Yeah, I'm always going to say I'm good.
So we first like to start every podcast. This one we'll be talking about jury selection or jury deselection, as some people like to say. But first we have a very important special guest. From Trial Lawyer Legacy, Mr. Dylan Dordick, and he's going to have a very special cocktail. Dylan, could you tell us what we have, what we're being served today, and why it's so choice?
Today we've got Mai Tais to remind you of that special happy place you go to in your head when all the jurors can't wait to tell you about how much they hate lawyers and lawsuits, and the judge won't strike them for cause because hating lawyers is fair to both sides. So, please, the happy place.
I gotta admit, these are strong Mai Tais.
I love Mai Tais.
Thank you, Dylan. So we, outside of the Justice Team regulars, we do have two special guests on this podcast. I'm going to introduce them first. The first one is Harry Plotkin, who is a jury consultant, also works with his wife, Claire. We've worked with Harry many times. He does both plaintiff and defense jury trials. He's been some of the biggest verdicts up and down the state of California. Harry, welcome.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
We also have, to my right...
Ooh,
another very special trial lawyer who, under the radar, has probably done 50 to 100 trials. He knows how to pick them pick them low, as Garth Brooks said. I know friends in low places. He knows jury selection in low places. Ladies and gentlemen.
Have you ever picked a jury in Huntington Park?
No, I don't think
that's as low as it gets.
So we have Mauro Fiore Jr.
Thank you,
here
Bob.
With us
Thank
today.
You.
Say hi, Mauro.
Hello, hello, hello.
All right. We also have distinguished trial lawyer to my left, Mr. Thomas S. Fair Esquire, Multiple Trial Lawyer of the Year Award winner. Tom?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you're listening.
And we have two Justice Team members to the couch, Jason to me. First one, we're going to have Grayson Goody. Grayson, say hello to everybody today.
Hello, everybody, today.
Yeah. And, of course, we heard him on the intro song, Sevi W.
Fisher.
Hi.
Wow, round of applause. So, before we get started, everybody can email the show. It's media@justiceteam.com. I'm going to start with a couple of questions we did have that were emailed in to us and in no particular order. We're going to start with this, and I'm going to ask Grayson this first question. Do you have any preferred clothing wear for jury selection, or what not to wear during jury selection?
I typically wear, like, the suit that I'm wearing. Something a little bit lighter, a nice blue tie to kind of get some trust in the jury. I try not to wear black suits, anything like that, you know, looking like a slick lawyer. I've got actually worse suits that I wear during trial that are a little bit tattered. And there's been a time when I've put my phone in my pocket and it's fallen through my pocket and gone all the way down to the floor. I think that gets you a little bit of something from the jury right from the get-go.
Especially when it has the Hello Kitty screensaver.
Exactly. My preferred screensaver during jury selection.
That's a good one.
Sevi?
You know, I'm a purple tie kind of guy. For whatever reason, I love a lot of people, when I wear a purple tie, come up to me and say, that's a great color on you. So I always started wearing a purple tie, and I like to look nice. I don't necessarily dress down, but I also don't wear a black suit. But I usually go, you know, blue suit, brown suit, dark gray or light gray with, you know, something with a purple tie. Has to be a purple tie, though.
And how about socks? I thought I caught you wearing some pink socks one time. Told you to get out the courtroom.
I don't recall that, Bob, but it would not be outside of my personality to wear pink socks. Oh. But not in the courtroom.
Can you tell us more about that personality?
You show me yours, I'll show you mine.
And I'm looking at Mauro's socks. Mauro, what do we have going on? Are those guitars?
This is a Buddha playing the guitar. Yes.
A Buddha?
I think there's a Buddha on here someplace. Maybe up
I don't see the Buddha.
A guitar. Thought the Buddha was on.
The Buddha's wearing the socks.
Yes. I actually have on Buddha cufflinks right now, so we would have matched. Yeah, it's Fat Buddha, the best Buddha.
Yes.
The best Buddha. Mauro, so tell us about your wearing.
Well, I'll tell you, the one thing is, if anybody knows me, they know that I never wear a white shirt, ever, unless I'm picking a jury. Or
you're like a district attorney.
Yeah, I don't wear white shirts. I wear any kind of color when I'm not in my trial mode, but I think you have to wear a white shirt, a nice crisp white shirt for the jury. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of gives you credibility. You know, kind of like the crisp white shirt you're wearing, Bob.
Very crisp. And for our listeners, I'm wearing a crisp white shirt.
Medium starch.
No starch. Mara, what are some don'ts? What don't you wear?
Well, definitely you want to wear socks, for sure. I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen these new young lawyers that are wearing these skinny suits, you know?
Yeah.
And no,
I buy a regular suit and it's a skinny suit.
Well, I've seen these young kids wearing skinny suits and you know, loafers with no socks in court, in trial. You know, I mean, I don't know where they think that plays, but
the Gucci,
you know,
loafers,
definitely wear some socks.
Gucci loafers.
Wear some run of the mill shoes. You know, go to Target, buy yourself some shoes. You know, something normal. You can relate to the jurors. No snake skin. No, nothing. I mean, the cowboy boots are a look that a lot of people are wearing, but I think that you can get, if you can get away with the cowboy boots, you should wear them. I can't get away with it myself.
Wow. Tom Fair?
The do's or the don'ts?
How about give it to us dirty, do them both?
I don't like to be a little more conservative in trial, but out when I'm in the real world, I like to flare it up a little bit. It's true. I mean, I'm wearing rainbow socks, you know.
Oh, I see that.
So I love everybody.
And that's a pink pocket square.
That's right.
Do you wear the same socks during trial?
Negative. I would never. I like to stick to my blues, my grays, my blacks.
Chartreuse.
You know, I like to wear like only two pairs of shoes, alternate like 3 to 4 suits, white and blues, you know, crisp. I don't even do cufflinks really in trial. I think it depends on your personality. Some people can rock a sick suit in trial, and it goes with who they are. And I think being authentic is the most important thing. So don't wear a blue suit, white shirt, and red tie because somebody told you to. You know, don't wear anything because we're telling you to, or don't, you know. Just be yourself. And if you happen to rock some sick flair in trial that I can't, and you get big verdicts, more power to you, man.
So I want to hear from the jury consultant. Come on, you're on the psychological edge.
Exactly.
So tell us. Tell us.
I do get asked that question a lot, you know, not just mostly by lawyers, not just people on the street saying, what should I wear? But, you know, I think it's, you got to know your audience. It depends on where you are. I mean, I always say, you know, don't go too high or too low. Don't look like you're super rich with the nicest suit in the world and the tie clip and the suspenders and the Rolex. You definitely don't want to look like a slick banker or, you know, investment banker. But you also don't want to go too low. But, you know, keep in mind what jurors think in Bakersfield is too much or not enough is very different from downtown LA or, you know, if you're in Manhattan versus out in the middle of Texas. So I think you definitely want to know your audience. You want to dress down if you're in a place that's not quite as cosmopolitan, and maybe dress up a little bit more if you're in a big city. But I think you want to go for the middle ground. You want to always look professional, especially when you're first meeting the jury. I think
what about colors? I mean,
colors. I do kind of agree with Grayson. You don't want to wear black. You don't want to look too, you know, conservative, look like you're on a board of directors somewhere at a stuffy pharmaceutical company. So I think approachable colors, especially in jury selection and opening where you're talking to the jurors, tan is good. Grays are fine too. A little bit of color, but not a ton of color. You don't want to wear the Regis Philbin, red shirt with the red tie on there. But anything that's fairly conservative, but kind of warm and approachable. I'd say stay away from black and too dark on the suit, but light is okay.
For me, always brown suit, always yellow tie, always white shirt, always brown shoes, always my Catholic cross cufflinks, more so for superstition than anything else.
Always missing a button.
It's a baseball player
is
right
that,
there.
Is that for sure. Jury selection, you're saying?
Always, same thing.
Oh, okay. This is jury selection.
Not the whole trial.
No, I don't wear the same thing every day.
I think it matters less. The more they get to know you in the trial and you already built that credibility and they get to know your personality, you can change it up a little bit more and kind of trend toward more what you like to wear. But I think those first couple of days when they're getting to know you is when you want to look the part of someone who's professional, successful, but not super professional or successful.
I mean, full candor, I think that's absolutely right. Like light colors in voir dire, mm-hmm. always go with light. We kind of always do that, light colors. And blue's got that trustworthiness, so...
Try not to wear the exact same thing as your trial partner either.
That happens to Sevi and I at least once a trial.
We get on the same cycle.
Yeah, we're
you hang out together, you get on the same cycle,
You guys you should text each other pictures of yourselves getting dressed.
You know what's funny? Grayson,
that's actually what Bob and I do.
Grayson and I coordinate the day before the trial. We message to make sure that we're not wearing the same
thing.
You
gotta do that. Now,
that's the only thing we text about. Bob says, "What are you doing tomorrow?" I'm going blue suit. Yellow tie.
We got to do that from now on.
I'm doing too much last-minute shit for you in the morning to text you.
What are you talking about, dude? Crazy, man.
One time I showed up for a trial in Cincinnati, and I'd never met these two other lawyers before, and it was me and two other redheads. And it worked out well, so I would recommend that if you can, but if you can't get away with being a redhead.
I would never wear. There's like a defense attorney suit for sure. It's like the black with like dark white stripes or window panes. Like, that's crazy. Like, I've seen, or you got really thick, chalky, like, white lines, like you look like some mafia boss. Like, don't come into court as a plaintiff's lawyer wearing that stuff if you want to win with wherever you're at.
I saw somebody yesterday wearing that exact same suit.
Come on, man.
All right, so we're going to go into
I have one question, though. Harry, so you're saying when you had hair, it was red?
Exactly. Well, if you could, you could kind of pick it up if it was at the right angle.
So I'm right behind you, bro.
I can't. I'm not really picking that up from here.
So. Look, all I'm saying is
this was a decade ago at least. So
we don't do advertisements on this show, but I'm telling you right now, use Propecia. I've been using since I was 25 years old. That's how you get this.
Wow. We better get an endorsement check.
I'm trying to match up with Avenatti now, just in case he calls me for one of these.
All right, we're gonna move to our next topic here, and the next one I want to talk to you guys about is the use of the mini opening, and I want to know why you think it's effective and what you try to get out during your mini opening. This time I'm going to start with the Atomic Tom Fairbear.
I think mini opening is an opportunity to just give the jury, a flavor of your case, and it's to highlight the issues you want to talk about in voir dire. And the issues you want to talk about in voir dire are the ones that are, most pertinent to your case. So if you have a case where liability is not too much of an issue and you really want to focus on damages, then you're going to have to talk about that in jury selection. And I'd get that out. Or if you have bad facts about your plaintiff or your case, that's stuff you want to get ahead of. And sometimes you want to make your case just – you don't want to paint it in the best light, but you don't want to necessarily paint it in the worst light. When you're giving a mini opening, it should be short. Sometimes you do want to state the amount of money you're going to ask, and sometimes you don't if you're trying to build credibility.
So talk to me about that. When do you think it's appropriate to state how much you're going to ask for, and when do you kind of hold that back?
I think if you got, a very ostensible injury.
What does ostensible mean?
Apparent. If you have a quadriplegic or you have a massive brain injury, I have no problem going in there and saying I want $200 million. Or if I'm going to sue a corporation that's been deceiving the public for 10 years, putting out a deadly product, I have no problem saying I'm going to be asking for $250 million if I can. I'd rather get that out. But if you have chronic pain case, which a lot of us do, cases that may be more difficult to prove medically, I think you have to earn the jury's credibility before you get there.
I think that's an important point. A lot of people think you always have to ask for the money, but I agree with you, Tom, that if you have a harder case either on liability or something that you have to build credibility on, don't throw that money out there first, or else the jury's going to be against you, even if they don't say it.
You know, it's funny. Like, you and I were talking about this, and we kind of came up at the same time. I mean, we learn stuff all the time, but both of us, I think, realized that around the same time we were talking to each other about it. And I was like, you know, absolutely. Because we're always experimenting. It's always, you know, like, the practice of law.
Like a condition that the jury doesn't understand, or something that's more invisible to, I guess, the naked eye. Is better to sort of build the credibility before, you know, teach them about it, let the doctors sort of go into the condition and how bad it is before you hit them with that, you know, I'm asking for $50 million at the end.
We may lead into this, Tom, but, I mean, what are you doing then in jury selection? Are you just saying, you know, in general, I'm going to be asking for a certain amount of money, or are you going into, you know, the specific amounts of money? Because that's obviously an issue in the case that you want to talk to the jury about.
Millions.
Definitely talk. Okay, so don't necessarily mention a number, but I think I'm – okay, so I'm about to try a case next week, and damages are my major issue, I think. And so I'm going to say, look, this lady has a loss of earnings, you know, future loss of earnings, and it's going to be a lot. And you could it's close to $1 million, you know, or we're talking in large numbers. I'll use, you know, sometimes millions or large numbers, substantial amount. Over $1 million, things like that. Generally, I'll do that because we do need to get there talking, you know.
But don't you think that in a mini opening, you can use it to really polarize the case, like instantly?
100%.
Right? Because I wasn't a big believer in a mini opening, and then I went to see Nick Rowley try a case, and he did a mini opening. He stood up, and he said, $70 million. That was the only thing he said, and he just stared at the jury. And a real uncomfortable... like amount of time before he said anything else, and it was I think it was really super powerful.
What were the injuries in that case?
Oh, it was a brain injury for a little girl.
Oh yeah, I mean, come on, man, a little girl's life is precious. Like a little kid's life is precious. Yeah. Like there's so much innocence and potential there. Like I'd ask for 100. Come on, Nick.
Yeah. No, I think you can really polarize the jury.
But I think if anybody sees how, you know, when Nick picks a jury, it's an art, you know, and he does things that not a lot of people can do. But I do agree, you got to polarize issues. And when I do it, I think you have to walk the fine line and get your bad facts out, certainly. But I present them as if these are the facts the defense is going to present to you. So the jury knows it's not coming from me, it's coming from them. I don't put forth my best facts at all during jury selection, maybe one or two just to get the jury kind of thinking on your side. But I want to hear Harry's thoughts on these because you do both sides.
No, I don't. I used to. I mean, I have a lot of experience knowing what the defense is doing from back in the day when I couldn't be picky and choosy about who I worked with. I don't work with the defense anymore,
nice.
Except on business type cases.
Harry.
Yeah, well,
can we get the clappies? Can we get the clappies?
This is at least a few years back.
The cheers.
I'll do, you know, business fraud. You know, breach of contract cases, business versus business, but not consumer. But anyway,
no more defense.
Thank you. That's what I was waiting for. That's why I do it for the.
He's a purist. He's a purist.
But no, I agree with everybody. But I think the main thing in a mini is if you have any of your bad facts that you don't share in a mini, you're doing it wrong because you want to rile up those bad jurors. You don't want to rile everybody up, and that's why if you have a case with a subtle brain injury or. You know, back injury where the jury's looking over at the guy and thinking he looks fine. If you say $50 million and they don't understand why immediately, all your jurors hate you. So that's not polarizing it. That's just turning everyone against you. But you want to share all your bad facts, and you don't want to give any of your good facts. I mean, if you have a case where you have some great facts, you want to bury the lead there. But you do want to tell the jurors that you're to expect something. So you want to kind of be very vague about your good facts and very specific about your bad facts. So you want to say, hey, you know, my plaintiff, you're going to hear during this, he was a pedestrian and he was drunk. He had been drinking at a bar. You're going to hear that. But we're going to prove to you that the defendant was negligent in this case. And now is not the time for me to share with you why, but we're going to show you evidence on that. So the jury's thinking, okay, they have something. I have no idea if they have a good case or a terrible case, but I'm going to be looking for it. I'm not going to think that their case sucks already. Mm-hmm. But your good jurors, if you give them the good facts, your good jurors are going to be walking out the door. And the example I always like to give, I walked into pick a jury one day a couple years ago, didn't know there was going to be a mini opening. The lawyer I was working with, the plaintiff's lawyer, gets up and says, you know, this is a wrongful termination, disability discrimination case. My client had breast cancer and gets fired during her treatment for breast cancer. And I just cringed when those words left out of her mouth because I knew what was coming. And sure enough, five or six of our best jurors all went walking out that door within the next 20 minutes because they said, breast cancer, you know, I'm a breast cancer survivor, or you know, I have strong feelings about that. How could you fire somebody with breast cancer? I can't be fair. I've already decided this case. They were gone. And I pulled her aside and said, you know, you just, you know, you can't say that. And so the next day, we actually got lucky enough. We burned through all our jurors. We got a new panel of people. And the second time she gave her mini opening, she stands up and says something more like, you know, this is a case where we're going to prove to you that they were fired because of a medical condition or disability, and kind of kept it vague. Didn't lose anybody for cause and got a great verdict in the case. So you got to be really careful about sharing your good facts, because your good jurors are sitting there. They didn't know the difference between, you know, the judge always tells them, you know, nothing that the lawyers say is evidence, but they think they've heard. You've told them a fact, they think they've heard evidence. They don't get that little distinction. And so you got to be real careful about sharing your good facts.
Did any of the second panel ask what medical condition? Because I feel like if I'm a juror, I'm sitting there thinking like, well, I would ask what medical condition.
I don't think that they did. I mean, I'm sure some jurors would. And you just kind of got to say, well, we're going to, you know.
We can't go in that yet, but yeah, just, I mean, generally speaking.
Yeah, I mean, you've told them all the bad facts, and then you're saying, it's too early now for me to tell you my good facts.
Right.
I think the thrust of it is, look, with the defense's facts, with the bad facts that are really against you, be specific, be accurate in describing what it is, so the defense can't take it out of context and put it in context right away, the bad facts, so you can talk about them. And then your really, really good facts, you just got to be vague about them.
Yeah.
You know, and speaking generally.
And Gray, what are some of the mistakes you see that the defense does with their mini opening?
Yeah, typically the defense will argue their opening really hard, and they'll really put out all their good facts. You know, I just tried a case in Orange County, and the defense attorney goes up there, and the judge literally was like, hey, this is a 3-minute mini opening. Guy was up there for 10 minutes, and he was just arguing the case, arguing. So that's kind of something that I see the defense do, not only a mini opening, but an opening as well, that obviously is different than what we think is a good thing.
And it's great for us when they do that, because it just makes it so much easier for the bad jurors to speak up and say, your case sucks, and he told me about your client drinking or your client doing this or that. It's great.
Plus, you oversell your case, you know, and then you get into the evidence, and some of those things that you argue, you might not be able to prove, and then we can exploit that in closing and say, hey, you know, he lied to you from the beginning.
And I have another email I'm going to pose it to Sevi, to this one. Mm-hmm. This is just in general. Does it matter? Do you usually use a court reporter for jury selection, and is it important who you pick?
Is it important who you pick for a court reporter?
Yeah. And then, do you use it for jury selection?
So I think it is important. We're superstitious. When I say we're, specifically I'm talking about me and Tom Fair, because we tried the most case together. We got to have KW on the, you know, our trial. It's got to be Candace or Whitney. And for voir dire specifically, we usually always waive. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, first of all, it's kind of, we like to show the judge that we're, you know, mindful of the court reporter. And sometimes the judges have their own court reporters who they really like, especially, you know, if you get some of these guys. I feel like some of our court reporters know the judges from back when, and, you know, they're good friends with them or whatnot. And so if you tell the judge, you know, we understand that we don't want to, you know, wear the court reporter's fingers out and all that, we're going to waive jury. And it also helps you say certain things, you know, maybe sometimes you don't want, you know, it on record for certain reasons. You can get away with a little bit more, I think, if you keep it off record.
If Judge Lusa brings court, you don't even he's not even there.
Right, so that's okay. You waive court reporter for the entire trial.
I think it's also for the benefit of the court reporter. How hard is it whenever you hear he or she has their back to the jury and you don't know who's speaking, juror number 3, 4, you have to say their name every time. It's hard to keep that record anyway.
Right, so. and the record, this is my favorite line, when defense attorneys do it more so than anybody, but I see no hands, you know. I think it's, I feel like they do that all the time.
You know, Bob, that was a great question, but is that Dylan kid around for more cocktails?
I think we put him back in his cage, but you know,
someone should go fetch him.
I think we put some moonshine to your right if you would like to partake.
Let me weigh in on that though, and advocate for the devil, which I do a lot. But there are times when I think, and I can share a story where, if you're anticipating a lot of cause challenges in a case, mm-hmm. especially if you have a judge that you know is going to be difficult, it may be a good idea to have voir dire reported. And I can tell you one example where we were picking a jury. It wasn't a very good panel. We really were hoping to get, we probably had 4 or 5 jurors that we should have got for cause, and the judge just denied them. And I went home that night and I went, you know what? The first guy that he denied and that was our first strike and ended up going poorly. We struck four or five people. The defense only struck two and the panel was still bad. And we're going, oh, gosh, what are we going to do? We're screwed. We come back and I go, you know, that first guy, I'm looking at my notes. I swear he said he couldn't be fair. And so I went back the next morning to the court reporter and said, could you pull what that guy said? And we showed the judge. And the judge said, you know, do you think you could set that aside and be fair? And the guy said, no. And the judge went, oops, well, I'm sorry. I'll give you another strike. And we said, you know, Your Honor, that was our first strike, and everything kind of dominoed from there. And the judge said, yeah, I agree. I'm going to get you a new panel. We had a lousy panel.
Wow. So I would say, generally speaking, you know, I think there's a...
What judge was that? What judge gave you a new panel?
Judge Palmer. Downtown.
Oh, wait,
he's fantastic.
Harry, speaking to the exceptions, I mean, I think generally I like to wave, but if you have, like you're saying, if you're concerned about the judge, or if you have a historically inflammatory defense attorney who gets up there and says some really bad stuff in voir dire and really, you know, sort of polarizes things and says derogatory, I think then you
if
should.
It's a, yeah, I was going to say, if it's a case where you need cause, yeah.
We were in front of a judge not too long ago, and I like this judge. I'm not going to mention his name, but you know what? We needed cause challenges. We needed them. And there were jurors that were saying they couldn't be fair, and he would not grant them. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, I mean, what do you do?
Let's go there now. Let's talk about for cause challenges. And, like, how do you walk them down the line? Because as plaintiff lawyers, we go first, so we know the defense is going to be able to try to rehab them when they go up, and they're going to say, oh, can you just follow the law? Can you follow the law? Can you be fair to both sides? Well, yes, he said it. How do we preempt that? Sebi, what are your thoughts?
I was just going to say, this is one of those answers, one of those, and I stole this from Ricardo Echeverria, this is one of those diaper answers, it depends. you know, it really depends on your judge. We had a judge, like Tom was just saying, who wouldn't give us a cause challenge if the jury came out and said, listen, I'm going to rule for the plaintiff, I'm going to give him, you know, whatever they ask for. He literally wouldn't give us a cause challenge if a juror came out and said that. Then we had a judge in Orange County who basically started that dialogue for us and the special sort of question we needed to ask in order to get them kicked for cause. And that was, if I'm starting on a doing a 100-yard dash, and if you know we're all starting on the line, if is either party starting behind when we're doing that 100-yard dash? And if you got a juror to commit saying yes one way or another, they're done for cause. And he bounced, like, I think we got rid of like seven or eight people for cause on that particular trial.
Well, Grayson, how do we preempt those jurors knowing the defense is going to get another chance?
Right, yeah, kind of to piggyback on what you were saying, Sevi, is when you know that you've got them for cause, you know that they've said those magic words, you step back and you say, okay, so you know that no matter what the defense attorney says or what the judge says, once I sit down, you cannot be fair. Yes. And you really solidify it there. So no matter what they say when they come up, then you can point back to that, whether it's on the record or not, and you can say, hey, this guy needs to be gone for cause.
And then you have those judges that's going to say, you can't be fair if I tell you to follow the law.
Are you saying you can't follow the law?
Yes, you can. Rehabbed.
You know, if you have a judge like that, they're not going to get cause challenges anyway. But
I think the key to getting them in their minds to get them ready to fight back with the judge is if you can convince them to think, the phrase that I use is, even if you try your best, because the judge is going to get, you're going to try your best, right? Well, I'll try. You know, so if you can convince them to say, in your voir dire, to say, even if you try your best, do you think it still may be difficult or maybe impossible for you to set that aside or be totally neutral? If you can get them thinking along those lines, when the judge asks, and I've seen it happen, they go, you know, I could try, Your Honor, but I just don't think that even if I try my best, it's not going to happen. Then the judge goes, oh, you know, what do I say to that? And if you guys wanted me to, you know, I came up not too long ago with a really good analogy, a story that you can give them, which is pretty funny. I like this one. So you say to the, you know, you say when someone says, I can try, or, well, you know, I think I can, you say, I want you to imagine you're getting on a plane. And as you're walking past the cockpit, you hear the co-pilot turn to the pilot and say, hey, at the end of this flight, you think you were going to be able to land this plane? And the pilot says, I think so. I'm going to try my best. What do you do? And every time I've had a lawyer ask a juror this, they go, I'm getting off that plane. And you say, exactly. So once you're on this jury, we're going up to 30,000 feet, and you better be able to land the plane. Do you think, you said you're going to try, and you think so, but do you have doubts? And every time I've seen that, the juror has said, yeah, maybe not. Right. Well, so
you
feel
know,
free
for,
to use
for
that.
Me, when I try I like to that get analogy. People, when I try to get people for cause, I use the old Keith Mitnick method, the 1 to 10. You tell them, you know, 1 to 10, 1 being that you're not, you have no problem with plaintiff lawsuits, no problem with first injury lawyers, and a 10 that you have a big problem with lawsuits and plaintiff lawyers. Give them the 1 to 10. And a lot of jurors that might not speak up and elaborate on a lot of their personal feelings will give you a number. They'll say 8. You know, obviously if they're an 8, they're super anti-plaintiff, super anti-lawsuit. So if you use the numbers, the 1 to 10, I think you can smoke out a lot of jurors that normally wouldn't be big talkers, but they'll throw out a number for you.
So we're about halfway through the podcast. So we have something here that we always do, the top 10 list. This time we're going to do a top 6. All right. So we have teams here. We're going to have actually 3 teams because we have a couple special guests. So our first team is going to be my left. So Tom Fair, Harry Plotkin, what is your team name? And Grayson Goody Sebi, think of your team name. And Mauro,
we got it.
You.
Yeah, I'll leave it up to Harry.
Good Fish.
Ooh, the Good Fish. That was a good fish.
So we have Good Fish and Harry Fair.
Harry Fair.
And I
love me a Harry Fair.
How about I'll be Lilith. We'll be Lilith.
And we have Mauro Fiore. So these are the top 10 things that a defense lawyer says. Or sorry, top 6. We asked 100 trial lawyers this question. I don't know if they're trial lawyers. It might just be regular lawyers, work lawyers. What are the top 6 things that a defense lawyer says during jury selection and asks the jury? It's going to work like this. It's going to start out with Harry Fair. If they get 1X, it's going to go over to
Good Fish.
The Good Fish. And if they get any X's, it comes to Mauro Fiore for the steal. So go ahead, top 6.
All right. I'm not going to confer right now on this one. I'm just going to go for it. Can you wait to hear all the evidence? Because the plaintiff goes first, and they have the burden, and then the defense goes after. And so they always get to go first. And so can you wait to decide the case until you hear all of the evidence?
Yes, that appears on the list. It's number 2.
All right.
Bing. Ding, ding, ding. So, right. So continue.
I'll do one. How all about right. the... This is a very sympathetic case. We're all gonna feel bad for this family or this victim. But the question, you got to set that aside. Can you set that aside and not use your sympathy?
Ding 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 ding. Sympathy appears as number 4 on the list.
The other one would be, just this one. Let me confer with my partner real quick. All right, can you confer like this?
You have to confer out loud.
Yeah, seriously. It's either the money one will give you 0 or...
I hear you.
All right, so we're going to go with the, the plaintiff is 0 asking for a lot of money. But if they don't prove their case, you're okay with...
they say it like that, too?
Are they okay with, you're okay with them, you know, giving 0, giving them nothing, making them walk away with nothing?
That appears as number 1 on the list. And it was also... Good. So there were 3 kind of in this one. Well... You understand if there's a tie, you lose. If they don't meet their burden, they lose. Can you give them 0? That was all wrapped into number 1. So we got 3 more to go.
I'm going
to
pass it off just because I want the other teams to have a chance. I mean, we're already halfway. I mean, you know, let them fight over it a little bit. Kind of like when you get 2 defendants. You know what I'm saying?
3 more to go.
There's not much meat left on the bone.
Hey, man, well, we're...
I got one, but it's probably low on the list. It might be number 7.
All right.
It might.
There's only 6.
What team is this, by the way?
Good Fish.
Good Fish.
All right, hello.
So you told the plaintiff's lawyer you might not be able to be fair, but, sir, can you follow the law and the judge's instructions?
That appears on the list.
Ding, 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 ding. All right, we got 2 more. Before Mauro, he's chomping at the bit to steal.
Maybe Mauro, can you join our team and help us out?
No, against the rules. Mauro, you're out on your own, bro.
Wow. I mean, God, they've gone through, like,
well, he's now incapable of winning as a matter of how many are left.
We're going to come back. 2 more. We're going to take it back, all right?
I'm going to say.
You can.
Wow, I don't know, man. It seems like they took all the ones that I would think of.
Mm.
Can they set aside their bias and leave it outside the courtroom, even though they might, you know, they walk into the courtroom and you say, can you leave all of your life experience outside the courtroom?
Trying to weave it.
That's what a plaintiff lawyer would say, Mauro. Come on.
How about the one where they say, you know, I represent a company, a corporation. Can you treat the corporation the same way you treat this sweet 92-year-old grandma?
Ding, 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 ding!
Number five.
Of course we can. Only if it's Costco.
All right, we got one left, and let's shoot it over to the good fish. One more. One more. Yeah. One more.
I mean, I have somewhat of an idea. If you want to give a guess?
Do you want to confer? You can confer out loud so that our listeners can hear.
I was thinking, like, hey, you're not, just because the plaintiffs here claim.
Oh, dude,
this isn't an answer yet. This isn't an answer yet. We're conferring.
You're not going to give them money, right? You're going to make them prove their case.
Do you know?
Won't you?
Do you know it only costs 2 cents to file a claim?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh yeah.
Ding 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 ding. Wow, they got them all. So it appeared on the list as, just because they filed a complaint, does that mean this case automatically has merit? And they
just because we're here.
Yeah. Wow, well played.
You sounded
well
like a very distinct defense attorney there, Bob. And I'm not going to name names.
Just because they filed the complaint, went through discovery, won the summary judgment motion. Do you think?
I'll give you a clue for that. I object.
You know, anyone can file a lawsuit.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to, that was our top 10 list. So we're going to go.
Top six.
Top six. Well played, everyone. We're going to go right back to the for cost challenge because I think it's a big issue. I want to hear some creative ways. So let's do it this way. Tom Fair, what is the first question or series of questions that you pose to a jury right out the gate?
How's everyone doing?
Come on.
Say it again.
How's everyone doing?
Good, Mr. Fisher. Fair.
I think it's, you know, look, sometimes I try to get a response if I think I need, crickets, right? Sometimes I try to just get a response from the jury, and I want to get them saying yes, and I want to get, like, a back and forth, almost like a cadence, you know? So the more kind of affirmatives you can get at the very outset, you know, I think that's helpful. That's one thing you can do. I kind of mix it up. Another thing I like to do is I learned this from Gary Dordick, actually, which is how many people are excited to be here. And I think it's an interesting question, actually. And you get a little bit of a laugh, but it opens things up. You know, I've, you know, tried the, you know, be brutally honest. That's more of a Nick thing. I don't really do that as much. But, you know, sometimes I just go to, like, a bad juror right from the start and say, you know, what do you think about, you know, this is a lawsuit where money's involved. We're asking for a lot of money. It's a personal injury claim. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, and to piggyback off of that, I do the same thing but a little adverse. I usually go to my best juror. Well, I start with the who wants to be here because usually I think people that want to be there are good jurors, will be for the right purpose. And the defense looks like a jerk if they kick them off. But I usually go to the juror that I think for sure is going to get off her cause from the plaintiff, somebody that's crying that had the same condition. And I start with them to gain credibility, and I say, look, we want a fair jury for both sides. And I think from what we heard here, and as much as I'd like you on this jury, can you commit that you would not be fair to the defense? And it's okay to say that. And then sometimes they'll say yes. And I'll ask them why, you know, just let them share a little bit. And then go to your worst juror and ask them the same question. Look, we want if someone's fair to us, so I got to ask you the same question. And I think once jurors see that they can, and I was on a panel, and a very well-respected judge tells their jury, if you talk, you walk. If you don't say anything, you're probably going to be here for weeks. But it's a good thing for jury selection. You want to hear them talking, right? So I kind of get that out there to go to. So that's generally how I start. Mauro, Fiore Jr., Esquire.
I like to ask
Otto Escovina.
Beautiful downtown Monrovia.
Please. Yeah, and you and Harry are actually your neighbors from out there. He's in Monrovia.
Not anymore. I was a few years ago.
Ooh. Yeah. Beautiful downtown Monrovia?
Exactly. Yeah, not too far.
It's Bob has Harry's old stats today.
What I'd like to ask right off the bat, I'd like to ask, I'd say, who here has heard of a frivolous lawsuit? You know, show of hands, frivolous lawsuit. Get them to raise their hands. You say, has anyone ever heard of a frivolous defense? You know, and you don't get as many hands on frivolous defense. But then I like to say, well, you know, just because the defense is going to come in here and poke all kinds of holes in our case and defame and the plaintiff and go after the plaintiff, does that mean that that isn't frivolous, or is it just because the defense is saying it that would it have credibility?
I like it.
So frivolous defense is something I like to bring up.
McDonald's.
Great, Quan, how about you?
You know, I kind of do the same thing as Tom, just say hi, see if anybody's excited to be here. And then I always, especially if we're allowed to give him any opening, I guess it's required now, we're we're supposed to give many openings. I'll just kind of ask an open-ended question and say, look, you heard some of the facts about this case, you know, just from the many openings from both sides. Is there anything that anybody has any feelings about, whether it's positive or negative, and get people to just start talking right away? And then for those people who are really being honest, I like to try to kind of celebrate that, you know, hey, thank you for being honest. Thank you so much. You know, it's brave for you to come up here and say those things, because it may not, you know, it might not be PC or something that you think is okay to say. You might think it's going to hurt our feelings, but thank you for saying it and celebrate that right off the bat, so people are like, oh, it's okay to do this. Let's talk. Let's be honest.
And another thing I wanted to add. So Grayson, for our listeners, is an avid outdoorsman. He surfs, he fishes, he hunts, he goes out in the wilderness. Dark hour. We don't hear from for weeks. Grayson, do you speak to your jurors about what the things that they love to do outside of work and that type of stuff?
Absolutely. I mean, if the judge allows it, you talk about passions. You say, hey, you know, say, for example, you got kicked off this jury today. You didn't have to go back to work. You didn't have to go see your family. You didn't have to go to church, whatever. What would you want to do? What are you passionate about? What gets you up in the morning? And the responses to those questions really tell you a lot about somebody, a lot more than, you know, where do you work or where do you live or how many kids do you have. It's, you know, I love getting up in the morning and going to, you know, the pound and caring for animals. You know that person's caring. Oh, I'm a teacher. Oh, I adopt children. You know, those are some things you can really get juries to start talking about, and you get to know these guys really well.
I watch Judge Judy.
It's just like, just to kind of piggyback on all this, I mean, I look at jury selection kind of, I mean, there's four things that I want to talk about always, or four areas, and the one is just like an introduction. Like, this is icebreakers, it's us getting to know each other, it's just getting them on a yes kind of thing, and then it's going to be liability, damages, and evidence. Like, those are the four things we're going to talk about in jury selection, you know, and that's how I see it. And I think at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how you necessarily start and what you do, you're just trying to talk to these people like regular people and see if they're going to be good jurors on your case. And
I think also you have to establish, is there a maximum amount of money that they think they could award without knowing all of the facts, all of the circumstances of the injury, of the damages? Is there a number in their mind that they can't like that? Is there a number in their mind they think they could never award? That's something you really have to know.
And something I also like to talk about is the burden, too. Start talking about, hey, what a low burden this is that we have to prove our case, and tell the jury the difference between a criminal and a civil burden. You know, start talking about the OJ trial and differences.
So this is – I introduced myself. I'm Robert Simon, the host for our listeners. Wow, shoot. But anyway, this is jury selection part one. We do have multiple parts. A lot of stuff to talk about in this one. I think we did cover a lot. But – I wanted to get to another tangent topic. So, Tom, you're a big foodie, right? So I just want to know, what are we seeing out there? Let's step outside the law for a second. What are you seeing out there in the culinary world, or things that interest you, or things that you're very into right now?
You know,
loaded question.
You know, I haven't actually been like out to a lot of. I've been in trial for like 4 months, so I haven't been on top of the food game or the food world. But I'm always into simple cooking and good ingredients. And so I think if you just do things that are simple and execute them well, and that's really the thing. Like,
Give us an example. What have you made at your house?
This is a cheesy thing, I think, but I call them – I used to be really into charcuterie boards, like, you know, cheese and meat. And when I first met Erica, I would make them, like, every night for her. I'd have, like – you know, the best, like, Iberico ham, like, A5, like, just ridiculous stuff. Like, you know, like stuff that's, like, $100 a pound. Like, just like, you know, stupid, you know, kind of things.
Melts in your mouth.
It's not stupid.
It melts in your mouth. No, it's legit. If you go to Barcelona, go to the big market, get some of that ham, A5 ham that comes right. You see them hanging there. That's the best ham, cured ham you're going to ever have. Anyway, so I used to make these things for Erica. I still cook for her and for us, but I've been like really into steak boards. Like, it's simple, but like cook a simple steak. Like, everyone loves steak, right? But I hate paying. I think it's, for me, I'm not interested in going to a steakhouse and like paying for that, because I know
He's
I can make
vegetarian.
It just as good. So, damn, you know, you get a T-bone, you get like a dry aged ribeye bone in, you get a filet, you know, you cook them right, like medium rare, and then you put them on a board with a bunch of other grilled stuff, like grilled rosemary potatoes, you know, grilled little gems with some balsamic and some like fresh shaved Parmesan and lemon zest. Always have some fleur de sel on the side, some fresh, you know, heirloom tomatoes like mixed up in some olive
oil. Sounds real simple.
I was just about to say the same
thing. Basil,
simple.
You know. And this is
it's
actually
pretty simple.
It's straightforward.
Didn't you have truffles over your house too?
Mac
I saw you had
cheese,
truffles.
Yeah.
So I got the bright idea. So I had Evan over and Rihanna is his wife and Noah, their little one, and you know, we were out there, we had some wine and stuff, and I was grilling, and I got this bright idea. Like, I grilled up some chicken because I knew, you know, Rihanna was coming over. She's not like a big, you know, red meat kind of person. No offense, I'm not saying anything wrong right here. I'm not putting it on our blast or anything. But anyway, so we had the chicken. Well, you know, I don't know, you know, the vegetarian thing, whatever. Or
Mauro's uncomfortable Mary over here.
Here's the point. So
Mauro's a vegan, and that's the truth.
Vegan.
He's an intellectual.
He only eats French fries.
Anyway.
And pasta. Yeah.
All right, continue.
Whatever, dude. You know, my story was boring. It was like totally dragging.
I was watching it cook as you explained it. So
what do you guys eat in trial? That's what I want to know.
Salmon.
Nothing.
Salmon every night.
That's
I eat
true.
Salmon,
eat
every,
salmon
night.
Every night.
Protein
every night.
Bars.
Bacon sandwiches and 5-hour energy.
You know what? So everybody in 5 seconds or less, Grayson, what do you eat during trial? Go. We're going to go around the room.
Literally bacon sandwiches and 5-hour energy.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing.
I load up at nighttime on carbs, but throughout the day, it's just protein bars, basically.
Mara,
a lot of coffee, a lot of salad, a lot of energy drinks.
Fair Bear.
Eggs, grapefruit, and a power bar during the day, and salmon and some veggies for night, and a glass of wine.
Every night?
Pretty much.
Harry.
Stanley Moss Courthouse, always the chicken teriyaki upstairs.
Right, depends on the courthouse, right?
Time,
that's true.
Yeah.
Definitely does.
But Stanley, you know what? Does everybody here pack their lunch, or do you
pack
you
lunch?
Know?
Yes,
pack lunch. It depends.
Get a breakfast sandwich at the courthouse, provided they have a good breakfast sandwich.
Grace and I, when we do trials together, we get a same breakfast sandwich every single
you
day.
You
got to
be careful
there.
With breakfast sandwiches.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
And then you eat it
as
all
crazy. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to wrap up jury selection part one. If you have any questions, remember to email media@justiceteam.com. This is Robert Simon signing off for you. And remember, no sleep till justice.
Is a burning cool. thing.
This song is insane.
You're all beautiful. You're
and
all beautiful people here.
A fire ring. Bound by wild desire. I suited up for a trial by fire. I fell into a burning trial by fire. I went down, down, down when they painted my client a liar. And it burns, burns, burns. Trial by fire. Trial by fire. The taste of victory sweet. When the law and evidence meet. Opposing counsel acted like a child. Oh, and the jury went wild. I fell into a burning trial by fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, burns.